This is VK6ARN. You're listening to News West. WA Amateur Radio News is a community organisation and has been serving up the news since 1931. Hello and welcome to News West for Sunday, the 19th of April, 2026. I'm your producer for this morning, Phil, VK6DEV. Now, on with the news.
I attempted to write this installment of Club Focus a few days ago and closed the blank document after staring at it for 10 minutes. I decided that if I had to think so hard about what to write, maybe I had nothing of interest to say. Not long after that, I attended the annual general meeting of an amateur radio club, and as AGMs go, it was pretty good, but it got me thinking about annual general meetings and what, in my experience, they have been, what they are, and what they might be. Probably the most exciting part of an annual general meeting is its closing. However, there is more to an AGM than getting it over with in as short a time as possible. Over the years, I've seen different approaches to annual general meetings. Sometimes members stay away, others get a good turnout. What's the difference? Firstly, let's look at the purpose of an annual general meeting. Most club constitutions are clear on the business of an annual general meeting, and the two major functions of the meeting are to elect office bearers and receive reports from the outgoing committee. I call these the major functions because they are the only functions performed at every AGM. Well, they should be. Next, there's provision for motions on notice. These motions are usually about changes to the club's constitution or other business provided for in the constitution. However, personally, I'd prefer to keep the annual general meeting as a celebration of how well the club is going and what we have to look forward to. So if you're proposing to do boring stuff that generates the most dissension, keep changes to the constitution for a special general meeting. Keep it out of the AGM. So what makes a good AGM? The simple, albeit fairly shallow, answer is a good annual general meeting is a brief one. My experience of well-run AGMs is where the committee has done its homework prior to the AGM. They make sure that there are suitable nominations for all committee positions, and that all reports have been circulated prior to the meeting, that the venue is suitable and refreshments have been arranged. I've heard it said sometimes when an AGM is run quickly and efficiently that members weren't given a fair go to have their say. In other words, they wanted to be able to go on about their favourite topic in front of an audience. In reality, the committee should create opportunities throughout the year for people to voice their opinions or ask questions. They shouldn't be waiting for an AGM. A simple way to deal with people who wish to have a say or ask questions is to close the annual general meeting and have a question and answer session, preferably after tea and coffee has been served. No two annual general meetings are the same, and I would never advocate that they should be. Good AGMs, however, have a couple of things in common. These are preparation and resolution. Preparation means that you get all the nominations in early, if you can, reports published and circulated, and the meeting advertised well within the timelines required by the Constitution, and early discussion about any motions on notice that have to be decided at the AGM. And resolution, sort things out. Most issues can be resolved at ordinary meetings, face-to-face discussion, or even via an email list. And remember that the club doesn't need to be pressed or rushed into making major decisions at an annual general meeting. If the group isn't sure or not ready yet, allow the motion to lapse with a plan to discuss over a period of time, and if required, call a special general meeting. And finally, make the annual general meeting enjoyable and non-threatening. Make it a celebration of a successful year. Make sure people can leave the meeting without having felt pressed into accepting a committee role. I'm Bob, VK6POP.
This is News West, your amateur radio news on VK6ARN, originating on the News West Linked Repeater Network and HF Relays.
Foundations of Amateur Radio. While spending some quality time discovering what I don't know about GNU radio, I explored the notion of attempting to at least understand a little more about how an FM signal works. Depending on your background, the letters FM mean different things. In amateur radio, it's a way to encode information, generally audio, using something called frequency modulation. Outside the hobby, the letters point at commercial broadcast radio. While the two are related, they're not the same thing. In amateur radio use, FM is a single channel of mono audio. However, in commercial broadcast radio, there's a whole lot more going on. Interesting because it gives you ready-made access to a composite signal that's just complicated enough to be challenging without being so complex that you need to spend hours on understanding the thing. In essence, a commercial FM broadcast signal is multiple channels encoded in a specific and documented way. This is helpful since you can compare the documentation against ready-made examples and replicate the process for yourself. In case you're new here, I'm in the process of building a radio system in software using GNU Radio in a project called Bold Yak. Specifically, the Bold Yak project aims to create a modular, bidirectional and distributed signal processing and control system that leverages GNU Radio. It's called Bold Yak because by the time I'm done, the yak is likely well and truly shaved. One of the easy things to forget when you're using GNU Radio Companion is that the blocks you're connecting together on the screen into a flow graph actually represent software generated when you either build or run the flow graph. This code is currently generated in either Python or C++, making me wonder, what does the code look like? And more specifically, what code would be needed to decode FM? It turns out that an old friend, the PiSDR.org website, has a whole chapter dedicated to this process. Chapter 18, the end-to-end example, details how you can decode one of the channels embedded within a commercial FM broadcast, the RDS or Radio Data System Signal. If you're not familiar, the PiSDR.org website represents a whole book about software-defined radio and Python. It goes into as much or as little detail as you want to explain how this whole software malarkey works and takes you by the hand down the path of discovery. So, armed with a working example, I followed along the bouncing ball and made a working RDS decoder, and I think understood most of it. There's a few interesting wrinkles that I've contacted the author, Dr. Mark Lichtman, about, and we'll see what comes of that. Here's the kicker. The author, who is also a senior member of the GNU Radio team, started with a GNU Radio flow graph and reverse-engineered what was happening to get to the point of the code that's available in PiSDR.org Chapter 18. This is significant because it creates a relationship between the code I have in front of me and the code generated by GNU Radio, which means that when I start with a new flow graph, not only do I know the steps required, I also know that the outcome is predetermined, as in, I already know that there's a solution. Having professionally written software for over 40 years, I can tell you that this is not often the case. I realize that I can search the internet for an RDS decoder flow graph, but that's unlikely to get me to a better understanding of what GNU Radio is doing. Once I've clarified with the author, I'll add the code to my GitHub project, 50 Things You Can Do With a Software-Defined Radio. Specifically, receive road traffic information, since, among other things, that's carried by RDS. As an aside, Roden Schwartz have a lovely YouTube video on the topic, Understanding the Radio Data System, which is giving me a whole set of ideas about things we might attempt with amateur radio repeaters. But that's a story for another time. Meanwhile, have you considered what other signals exist on the RS spectrum that you might want to decode and how you'd go about this? I'm Ono, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima Alpha Bravo.
This is Peter, VK3YE, and you're listening to News West.
The April edition of the QTC magazine is now available to be read online or to download. And in this issue, we have an article about the geometry of Bouvet Island to VK DX path. That's a mouthful, but it's a very interesting, technically good article for someone to read. And there's an excellent item about the Titanic and its links to amateur radio. It's a great read. And how safe is your tower or your mast? When's the last time you did any real maintenance? There's some tips about maintenance. RASA promotes amateur radio at a national hobby show in Victoria. There's some photos there of RASA's table. There was a couple of other amateur radio people there too. Artificial intelligence and amateur radio, we spoke about it last month, and this is a follow-up article. I think it's something we have to take really seriously because it's going to be something as time comes on. There's an update on the DITs and DARs for CW operators, DX activity, Antenna Palooza, that's happening this very weekend, and I'll be there to watch it happen. And there's an article on contesting, and there's more. Be especially good to our advertisers. They pay us a little bit of money every month to put their advertisements in. And of course, we're always looking for more advertisers. If you'd like to have your shingle hung up in QTC, give us a call. info@vkradioamateurs.org. And you'll find the QTC magazine at the website, vkradioamateurs.org. I'll say it again, vkradioamateurs.org, and click on the QTC menu item. Then you'll be presented with a screen that gives you the option to read the magazine that you want on the screen, flip the pages, etc. Or you can click on the download and get a PDF down onto your own computer. I'm Bob, VK6POP.
You are listening to News West, your weekly news from VK6ARN. If you have any items for the news, the latest they can be submitted is noon Friday. If you have an item you would like read out by the news team, please give plenty of notice to allow someone to record the item before the Friday deadline. This is Darren, VK6EK, for Amateur Radio News, VK6ARN.
Hi, I'm Steve, VK6SJ, with this month's news on the Northern Corridor Radio Group. Well, as is normal at NCRG, we have lots happening. We finally got the rotator refurbished, antenna controller repaired, and we now have our antenna switching automated, although we are still ironing out some minor issues. The antenna switching also switches in high power bandpass filters depending on the selected band, and as long as the two radio rooms are on different bands, we can share the filters and some of our monoband antennas between both rooms. Switching occurs initially by the radio controlling an SPE amplifier. In each room, there are two radios connected to each amplifier. Each amp can be controlled by one of two radios and then sends a common data stream containing frequency information via a serial link to a Raspberry Pi running Node-RED, which is a program that allows lots of disparate modules to connect together. The Raspberry Pi Node-RED application then determines the band required based on the frequency information coming from the amplifiers, and causes a web relay server to provide two separate 4-bit BCD sets to a pair of 403A Antenna Genius switches, which then switch in the appropriate bandpass filters based on the frequency data provided by the radios. Another bank of coaxial relays are used to allow two of the Antenna Genius switches to be cascaded, as well as to allow switching between the multiband antennas we use and various monoband antennas. Residual issues we're still working on include overheating of the Raspberry Pi and some data leaking that are both contributing to the system slowing down. This project has had lots of little challenges along the way, including beefing up the club's IT network, cooling the various bits of equipment, and a complete redirecting of the way we achieved what we needed about halfway through the job. Good, clean fun. The club had a lot of fun during the John Moyle Field Day, and we also fielded an M1 contest entry to the CQWPX contest, where we gained a few new contest operators for the team, and a good time was had by all. We clocked just over 1,000 contacts for the contest, which we were quite happy with. The most important thing we achieved, though, was to get a few more operators blooded for the contesting team, but we can always do with more. So if you're a keen contester, or want to become one, consider coming along to our Sunday morning get-togethers and join the club. We also meet formally on the fourth Sunday of every month at 0900 hours sharp. Thanks for listening. This is Steve, AK6SJ, reporting for the Northern Corridor Radio Group.
Have you heard about the new repeater in Bunbury yet? About a year ago, the Bunbury Radio Club identified a need for a repeater with enhanced coverage in the Bunbury area. Our current repeaters are currently located near Harvey. Primarily, the aim was to provide handheld coverage for new hams who may only have a low-powered handheld radio. We hope getting people straight on the air and talking with other hams will increase new hams' enjoyment and the longevity in the amateur radio game. So after quite a lot of work by many in the club, VK6RBX was put on the air a few weeks ago, just off the Coldfields Highway near Rowlands. The BRC club members have been testing coverage and reports from Mandra to Busselton and all points in between have been received. Importantly, handheld coverage is possible throughout most of the Greater Bunbury area. If you're in the Bunbury area, tune your radio to 439.850 MHz with a negative 5 MHz offset and a CT-CSS tone of 123. Give the repeater a run and have a chat with the local hams. Those details again, 439.850 MHz with a negative 5 MHz offset and a 123 CT-CSS tone. The Bunbury Radio Club would like to thank all those involved in making this dream a reality. I won't try to name you all, but you know who you are. If you're a Bunbury local or live in the greater southwest area, why not check out the club website and get involved? Look us up on the web at bunburyradioclub.com. That's bunburyradioclub.com.
This is News West, your amateur radio news on VK6ARN, originating on the News West Linked Repeater Network and HF Relays.
Hi, I'm Steve, VK6SJ, with another episode of Did You Know? Today, I thought I'd talk about contesting again. I did talk about this early last year, but I didn't go into much detail on individual contests, as not all contests are constructed the same. The big worldwide DX contests like the CQ Worldwide and the CQ WPX, and many of the more regional DX contests like the Oceania DX contests, each have thousands and even tens of thousands of participants. And it's all about contacting as many different stations on as many different DXCC entities, on as many contest compatible bands, that is, non-WAC bands. Being competitive is not just a matter of 2 kilowatts and stacked Yakis on Cocos-Keeling Islands. There are generally many categories that allow someone with 100 watts or even less and a wire antenna to be competitive against others with similar setups. Single bands are normally a category as well, so if you have a good monoband antenna on, you may find yourself competing against some of the bigger boys on an even platform. My best result was a 10-metre only entrance for the CQ Worldwide. The beauty of doing that on 10 metres was that there was no graveyard shift for me. The Remembrance Day contest, though, is certainly one of my favourite contests. It's in mid-August, third Saturday in August every year, and it would have to be the friendliest contest I've ever participated in. This is a contest where many hams participate who participate in no other contest but the RD. It has categories including single and multiple operator categories. Single categories also include subcategories on phone, CW, mixed, QRP versions of the same. There's also categories for teams, where you operate as a single op station, but as part of a group of three friends, where you can compete against other teams as well. These categories are also measured with each state as well as nationally. So even the simplest station can be competitive in a category that their station is capable of operating. Another unique category of the RD is a state competition. This is simply the combined score of each station in a given state, divided by the amount of licensed operators in that state. You may or may not know that WA was the most proliferant winner of the state comp for many years. This changed to Tasmania a few years back. I've heard plenty of comments bandied around that the rules are skewed towards only East Coast stations. You may or may not know that a West Coast station still holds the record for the highest score in the RD, and that this was only a few years back. Admittedly, this was one of the better stations around, but there are a few other similar stations in WA as well as on t'other side that could have given them a run.
My view on how to be successful in the RD in the open categories is stay on air for the whole contest. If you knock off late evening and have a snooze and start again at 5 or 6 a.m, you won't be competitive, as being between midnight and 6 a.m. local time, there are double points. The contest is laid back enough that you can snatch an hour of sleep here and there, and for us here in the West, it does finish at 11, so you can catch up on sleep on a Sunday arvo. If you're on a single op station, you need a strategy to make it through the whole 24 hours. Some tips. Avoid alcohol. Avoid caffeine, or at least minimise it to when you really need it at 3 a.m. Eat food that's easy to digest. Light sandwiches are a good choice. Plenty of water is also good. Do give it a break every now and again. Grab that dusty old Morse key and give it a shot. The RD is a very friendly contest, but even more friendly on CW. There's some very good operators who can do 40 plus words a minute who will happily slow down to 10 or 15 words per minute, even if it is only just to get your call sign in their log. On top of that, CW contacts are double points, so worth the effort. Even if your CW is a bit rough around the edges, like mine, you can take a minute or two to process a contact and still be competitive. Just don't try that in the CQ worldwide. Rig up an antenna on 160 metres if you can find the room. 160 metres is double points, as is CW, as is operation between midnight and 6 a.m, bringing every 160 metre CW contact after midnight to 6 points per contact. 23-7 is also double points, so if you have something on 23-7, it's worth firing it up. With the advent of the IC9700 and the trusty old Kenwood TS2000, there are surprisingly large cohort in Perth of 23-centimetre aficionados. Perth in particular has a pretty enthusiastic group of contestants on 6 metres, 2 metres, 70 sems and 23 sems. There are group frequencies we all hang out on that easily allow you to net 20 or 30 contacts on each of these bands every 3 hours. Similarly, there are frequencies on each of the HF bands that are also like call frequencies. Just don't hop on those frequencies unless you are happy to share it. Obviously, it's good to have 400 watts through Yagis on all bands from 23 sems to 80 metres, but for most of us, that's just a dream. You do, though, need to make sure that you're maximising the capability of your station. A good look through your whole station to make sure you have no faulty connectors, etc. Spend a bit of time to make sure your antennas are all resonant so you're not wasting power in both directions on an ATU. Be friendly. This is the ultimate friendly contest. You don't need to make 6 contacts a minute to be competitive. This is a contest that rewards a friendly demeanour. Particularly in the middle of the night, spend a minute to have a chat. It's more fun than calling CQ and no one answering. Don't believe the myth that the contest is skewed to the East Coast. Where we have an advantage is that our skip zone, whilst facing east, is centred on Alice Springs, but someone in Sydney's skip zone is smack bang in the middle of the most populated states in the country. We have plenty of operators participating on VHF and UHF, which could easily be 30% of your tally. Whilst the RD is not a field day style contest, camping out of town on a hilltop somewhere with enough trees around to support, say, a 3 to 5 element wire Yagi on 40 metres and even a 2 or 3 element Yagi on 80 metres facing towards southeast Australia puts you in the big league. Even if you're running barefoot, if you choose that site wisely so you're still overlooking Perth, you can take advantage of the UHF-VHF set, plus a quiet enough noise floor on HF to work any modest station on t'other side, and enough gain to be heard by said station. Well, I think it's about time that WA took back its state trophy, eh? This trophy is not won by the bigger states generally, but it does take a strong community spirit, something we have droves on here in the Wild West. Why not make the RD your first contest and give it a crack, even if it is only aimed at bolstering our score for the state trophy? Thanks for listening. This is Steve, VK6SJ, and you're listening to News West.
Hello, everyone. A couple of quick notes from the West Australian Repeater Group. WAG had a great technical activity session Saturday last week in collaboration with the VHF group up at Wireless Hill. The weather was great, we barbecued a few sausages for lunch, and we also got some work done. The Wireless Hill VK6 RFM repeater was dismantled, internal fans replaced, and some other changes made to improve the cooling, try and get around the overheating issue the repeater's been suffering from. The team of Marks, VK6 Echo Zulu and VK6 Delta Yankee, built and tested a heap of our 2-metre pogo antennas, ready for the next swap meet and hamfest, and we also did some further work on some of the cavity filter sets. Our next technical activity session's being planned on the first weekend of May, so save the date, come along and join in. Also, an important update for 23cm users. Our new repeater is now repaired and on its way back to us. As soon as it does arrive, next few days we expect, we'll arrange to get it back up to the Tick Hill site and back on air. We're very grateful to ICOM for their warranty support and for sorting this out so quickly. And thanks also to WAG President Matt, VK6ML, for doing all the organising work with ICOM. Look out for some more updates as we get them. WAG's last meeting was held Monday the 13th, last week. We discussed some long overdue changes and updates to our website. We also made some plans for WAG's AGM, which is coming up in a couple of weeks on Monday, May the 4th. Save the date and we look forward to seeing you there if you can make it. And thanks again to all the WAG members who've paid their renewals for the year ahead. And if anyone still needs to renew or would like to join WAG, it's never too late. Email us at secretary@whiskeyalfaromeogolf.org.au and we'll send you the details. Once again, we thank the team at News West for putting this to air, and this has been Anthony, VK6AXB, on behalf of WAG.
Good morning, it's Roy, VK6X-Ray Victor, with this week's Lack of Helpline for the 19th of April. Once again, I'm here, but very little to send on you to you this morning, but Keith may still have the following items. He may have a Maxon, you have a Papa Mike 100 UHF 70 centimeter transceiver complete with manual, $50 for that. There's also a pair of Bofang handheld transceivers, power supply, $50. There's a Zitagi, difficult to say when you haven't got teeth in, a HP 12S variable power supply, $50 for that. Thanks, Roy, says Keith, VK6 Papa Tango. His email address is keithpedersen962@gmail.com. And that's the only repeat that I have for you. Nothing new this week, so I'm running out of a job. I'm still here, so if you have anything that you would like to dispatch or receive or information, give me something to do. Give me some information that I can relay it to all the listeners. Okay, thanks, 7-3, and if you want to contact me, vk6xrayvictor@bigpond.com is the best address. Thank you once again for listening, 7-3.
Well, we've come to the end of another News West broadcast. Thank you to the team at VK6ARN, our readers and contributors, and those that put the broadcast to air every week, and especially to you, our listeners. We welcome feedback via newswest@vk6.net. Please stand by now for the callbacks after the broadcast, or you can visit vk6.net and fill out the callback form. 73 from me, VK6DEV, and all the team at WA Amateur Radio News.